Hi, welcome to the UCB Theater Podcast for the week of whatever week this
whatever,
is.
Whatever week it could be.
We're back, Will.
It's August.
Finally.
Wait, I'm going to tell you. Wait, today is the...
Today's the 27th.
And we're going to try to release this on the 30th.
Yeah.
So this is the week of August 30th.
Yeah, this will hopefully be the week of August 30th.
Yes,
right.
And today our special guest is the improv group Doppelganger. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Wonderful. The powerhouse improv group.
Powerhouse, yeah, which emerged this summer as a big powerhouse team at the theater.
Mm-hmm. Fresh off their, what was it, 8-week cage match?
Seven weeks. For 8 weeks.
You won seven times. Yeah. Right. You won seven of their 8 weeks.
Yeah, so. Tied with the Brothers Hines for this year.
Don't rub it in. I know. Let's emphasize tie.
Right.
I'll see you in the postseason. And anything else we could talk about today, John, or just our normal digressionary bullcrap?
Yeah, we'll just talk about that. I mean, we've been kind of remiss in getting these up
regularly.
We've been terrible, but
it's the summer. It's August.
Yeah,
it's
everybody goes on vacation.
It
gives a shit.
Go to Europe and like our house in the Hamptons.
Yeah, and you went all the way to Europe.
I went to Europe. Yeah, I got on a cruise.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed in Switzerland.
Wow.
In Geneva. Did you know I have a house in Geneva?
I did not know that.
Yes, I bought it from Charlie Chaplin. Well, ladies, let's talk about you guys.
Yeah.
So, Doppelganger. The members of Doppelganger sitting across from me are Nicole Byer. Say hello, Nicole.
Hello.
Keisha Zoller.
Hello.
And Sashir Zameda.
Hi.
Okay. Well, that's all I got.
Okay. See you next week, everybody. So, how did you ladies meet and get together?
I met Sashir with...
This is Nicole talking.
Yes, it's me. Sylvia Ozels put us on a mashup team, and then I misbooked her two-person team, so then I had to perform with her.
Oh.
Wait, what happened?
I'm terrible.
You skipped a lot of details.
No. I want to hear it. So.
Well, we started in a mashup group, and then she had a two-person team, and I was like, you come do my show with my other team. And then I told them the wrong time.
Yeah.
So, homegirl, what's her name?
No, we have to say her name.
Okay. Nope. Girl, she's small.
Uh-huh.
She didn't come because I told her the wrong time.
Right.
So then I had to perform with her. In hindsight, I think it was like, I'm going to misbook them.
You
so
were subconsciously trying to play with Sashir.
Yeah, she's so talented.
I see.
Yes. I see.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it went. Well, we all met through the diversity program, pretty much. That's how I first met Keisha at a meeting. And then Sylvia already hooked us up in the mashup group because we opened up for Suck My Dick last year.
Oh, I know this show you're talking about.
Yeah.
This is the Under St. Mark show.
Yeah,
so Shannon O'Neill taught an all-ladies improv class, I don't know, called Suck My Dick?
Yeah, it started out as a 600, right?
Advanced study class. No, it was a great show. And they would get together and do like their own shows, and they did one at Under St. Mark's. They were hosting it, and they would ask other female performers from the theater to perform. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah, they asked a female improviser to create their own all girl group, and Sylvia chose us and Ashley Ward, who's our coach, who's Doppelganger's coach, Alexis Sorella, Betsy Hoffman, Grace Bello.
There's a rule on our podcast that whenever you try to list all the members of a group, you forget somebody,
you have to leave
and
somebody.
They get mad at you the next week.
No, so. She did so good.
I think I got everybody.
No,
yeah.
You did.
Yes. Okay. So that was me and Nicole. And then I did have a two-person group with a girl that I met in my 201 and 301 class, and we did stuff together. But then the new year came for 2010, and she reprioritized her life.
Sure.
But we still had booked shows that we needed to go to, and so I did two-person stuff with, Nicole misbooked us, or like told us the wrong time.
I see.
And Nicole was there, and she's like, well, we perform together anyway, so we can just go ahead, and I can just take her spot. And then there was a show that I was supposed to do for Keisha's group, the Red Tie Mafia, at Gotham, and I just came, and I was like, I don't know what to do. And Keisha's like, I'll get up on there with you. And that's the first time we ever performed
together.
This was a Nobody's Token show?
No, this was a Red Tie Mafia. It's a short-form improv group
I do. Yeah.
But, like, I booked her group, and they didn't show, like, only Sashir showed up. And I felt so bad that I was like, of course I'll play with you, Sashir. And then we had an amazing set, and we're like,
we should do this again.
It felt like really a really awesome hookup where you're like, no, tonight can't end it right now.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Just, like, call her tomorrow? I don't know.
But it felt really good, and so... And so,
yeah, for a few months, we just kind of, like, messed around, and me and Keisha did two-person stuff, and me and Nicole did two-person stuff. And then after Harold Callbacks, like everyone was saying the same thing, like we need to do more shows, we need to be seen, and I was like, I can't do it in two different avenues, so I was like, let's all combine forces, and they never played with each other, but we
barely knew you,
but we our first time playing was at a Poison Ivy Massacre show at the Creek, and it was amazing.
It was the
best Creek show I've ever had.
Yeah.
That's they're an indie group, right? Poison Ivy Massacre? Are they still around? Yeah. I feel like I haven't heard that name in forever.
I mean, I barely know what's going on with my own team.
Anyway, sorry.
Well, when was that?
Like, when March 31st is our anniversary.
March 31st.
And all three of you made it to the second round of a Herald audition.
Yes.
You were all in the final round for teams this year. And then none of you made it, so you walked out with a proper-sized chip on your shoulder to motivate you for...
That's pretty much... Okay, so we'll do our own thing.
Yeah.
I was like, let's submit for Cage Match. Because I think we only had done like three shows before. I was like, let's do that.
And we're like, okay. And we didn't think we'd get booked soon.
Yeah, we got booked like a week after I sent the email.
He's good at his job. He knows who the good teams are to book. There are so many great teams that come through Cage Match. It doesn't surprise me that he'd be like, this will be a good team.
And Nicole's email was so taunting. She was like, I know you don't book small teams, but whatever. We're really good. So.
Really? Was it like that?
Yeah.
It was pretty much like that. And so Charlie was like, okay. Yeah.
Let's see how this goes.
Yeah. Sometimes you gotta catch the eye like that, you know?
But it's funny because it's like we actually knew each other before because my other improv group, I'd been booking you guys at Wizard Sleeve.
We did two Soul Glows.
You've done three
Soul Glows.
Yeah, Soul Glows has been around for a year, and they've done like a quarter of all the shows we've done. So that's, I feel like, how I really got to know
you. And what show are you mentioning there?
The Soul Glow Project. It's a show that just recently moved from the East Village to UCB.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it celebrates diversity in comedy, and so it's a variety show. Sketch, improv, stand-up, song, dance, anything that's funny and and variety.
How many? There's one at least at UCB. Was there more than one at UCB?
You've done two so far, right? And you're doing your third monthly show in September.
September 17th at midnight.
There we go.
Plug it. But
we need a plug bell. I'm going to make a note to myself to get a plug bell.
Well, one thing I want to say that's easier for me to say than someone who's on the team is how good the doppelganger shows are, which I feel like I missed the first Cage Match show, but you had unseated Bad Men.
Yeah, who wasn't at that Cage Match show.
Poor John. John, of course, a member of Bad Men. This is really like a council of rivals. The brothers versus Doppelganger versus Bad Men.
I'm not bitter towards you. I will go to my grave furious at how terrible we were.
John's hatred is all self-directed. fear him not. Like any good comedian, all the anger goes inward.
Yeah.
Just to put it in context for improv nerds, Ruru, which went on like a super tear last year and maybe even the year before, I forget. Ruru was always a dominant force at Cage Match.
Yeah, they were the awesome, champions, the Cage Match champions team. Last year. Mm-hmm.
They were not only the Cage Match champions, they won almost every week last year.
Mm-hmm.
And the year before, they went on a similarly huge run, and they were on another big run this year. And then Bad Men beat them. And it's I would call that an upset, not an insane upset, as Bad Men is a great Herald team, but just because Ruru was so like vaunted or whatever, that might not be the right word. Mm-hmm. It was like, wow, Ruru went out.
Yeah.
Bad Men took him, and maybe this is going to be, maybe Bad Men's going to tear it up.
Yeah, I'm aware of what the sentiments were.
So then the next week was, I'm just doing it, this is what happened. Next week was Doppelganger, and I was like, who's Doppelganger? What is that, some sci-fi nerd, some like Star Trek reference? That's what it sounds like. It's like Captain Kirk Doppelganger episode or something. It sounds like a D&D character group or something. I was expecting to see like Brett White and a bunch of people dressed as the X-Men. I'd never heard of Doppelganger. And
we're definitely not that.
I bet you guys would do a pretty good Star Trek scene.
Maybe. Star
Trek. Yes. My name's from Star Trek.
Is it? Oh. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, Sashir.
Why wasn't this the first question we asked?
It's season 2, episode 50. Captain Kirk was flirting with this alien chick, and he gave her a rose. And she's like, we have something like this on my planet, except it's made out of crystal, and it's called Sashir.
Oh. Are you kidding me? What? That is amazing.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
You should put that in the intro to every show you do.
Yeah.
For a room of improvisers?
I don't know. I think Sashir might get stalkers.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
So we should be.
Yeah. Admitting that on this podcast, you are going to get 12 new stalkers.
Star Trek, really?
Doppelganger won, and so the next day, Friday, like I wasn't at the show, and I was like,
handily.
Who won?
Doppelganger won.
They
handily
decimated you,
yes.
And so it was like,
yeah.
And I remember seeing you the next morning, John, doing your work responsibly, but looking kind of glum. And I just assumed you had won. I was like, hey, how's cage match? Not good. And I like looked on the scoreboard. I was like, holy Jesus,
yeah.
Who's doppelganger?
Yeah.
And I forget who had seen it, but maybe it was Sylvia, actually. I forget who had seen it, but somebody was like, you got to see them. They're amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember which of the weeks I finally got down there to see it, but it was awesome.
It was the Sandino show.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Great cage match. Both halves were amazing. Sandino, hot new Herald team, of course, did a Herald and cage match, which isn't done that much. Mm-hmm. Both halves are really great. But you blew the doors off them, didn't you?
It was close.
That was a close week?
Yeah, 12. It was 12 votes, yeah.
We've had two really close.
That one and Classic Masculinity.
One vote.
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm.
Classic Masculinity had beaten Ruru last year. They were the ones that unseated Ruru.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of like the giant killer versus the giant killer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's all just cage match nerd stuff. The thing that was interesting. Oh, yes.
John, oh, no, go ahead. Finish your point.
I'll probably go for an hour.
Well, no, I was going to ask, like, what was it? What were your feelings and thoughts coming into that cage match, being as Will described, like a team that I feel like probably a lot of people were like, who is Doppelganger, and, you know, going against this established kind of team and everything?
Honestly, we figured you guys were resting because you're like, indie team, we just beat Ruru, so we're like, we're going to work real hard.
Huh.
Yeah. And,
might be right.
And we actually hadn't been doing our form that long.
Yeah.
Because how we started is so. How we kind of came to our organic form, we...
Why don't you say what your show is a little bit?
We basically do an organic deconstruction. So we do a deconstruction with the sourcing, and then our edits are organic. And we kind of found that through rehearsal and warming up. We didn't go in with the idea of, we're going to do organics.
Yeah.
Or that we're going to do a deconstruction.
Yeah. No, we originally, when we first started playing, we just did a montage of scenes. And
the sweep edits. And
yeah,
everything.
With sweep mm-hmm. edits.
And long scenes. We had like three scenes in the show.
long scenes. And how our organics really started is... Before every show, we'd warm up, and we just naturally mirror each other. Like, we don't try. One of us will just be standing clapping their hands, and another one will start clapping their hands, and by the end, we're singing and dancing.
And homeless people are rapping.
Yes. That did happen.
In front
of Sparkle Cafe.
Sparks. The old UCB.
The old UCB theater.
In front of the old UCB, we were warming up, and... we were just like dancing, and a homeless man started like beatboxing.
And then we just kept going. We're like, I don't want to keep going, but I don't want to like stop.
You don't want to say no when you're warming up to do your improv show.
Right.
Then again,
right.
You don't want to be assaulted by a
stranger.
Right.
Like, yeah, keep going, move it. Yeah.
Do it, girl. Do it.
that bum might be the best connoisseur at improv. And he's been out there for like 15 years. He's seen more improv shows than most people.
Sure.
Yeah. And so from there, we were just all of our warm-ups in rehearsal were organic. And Ashley Ward, our coach, she was like, I love watching you guys do it, and you guys are so great at it. Why don't you do it in your shows?
Yeah.
And we were all like, what?
All right.
In our shows?
And I'm retarded. I'm like, how are we going to do that?
Did you use that voice when you asked the question?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't easy finding our groove. I mean, I feel like we still haven't found our groove because we've been growing every week as we do cage match in front of other people.
Yeah.
We've only been a group, since March, and then we started doing cage match in
actively doing shows is maybe less time or something.
Right.
No, actively. We started doing shows out of the gate.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, we didn't rehearse before. We just like met and performed. And we're like, okay, we're a group.
I enjoy your work.
Let's go back to John's question because I accidentally stepped on this. What were your feelings going into the first one? So you were kind of thinking, oh, Batman won't be suspecting us. So if we focus up, we have a chance here.
And I think we all felt that, like, we know we have a special group mind. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that is kind of funny. The name Doppelganger has rung more and more true as we've gone on because, like, we have this energy where we're automatically on the same page no matter what we do. Like,
yeah.
Sometimes down to the way we dress. Mm-hmm. And
yeah. This is weird. We never plan our outfits.
Today we're not matching.
No.
Because we're not performing.
Yeah, if we were performing.
We'd be all decked out and matching.
But I think these two girls are immensely talented, and I think we all share that same vibe. So I think we had this energy of, we know we're talented.
So you're confident.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just really excited. I was more excited just to play with these girls on stage than, like, mm-hmm. to compete. I was excited mm-hmm. that people would see us mm-hmm. and that we were going to have a lot of fun. I just knew we were going to have a lot of fun. And it was a really fun show.
It was fun show.
But you wanted to win, Nicole?
I did want to win. Yeah. I'm a competitive person. I like winning. But I didn't mind losing to
Rogue Elephant.
No, not mm-hmm. at great all. Show.
Mm-hmm. I think it was just our time. Time to go. People were tired.
So you do the show, and then you're standing, I'm assuming, standing in the back of the theater where everybody stands to wait for their cage matches. Is that where you all were after the show, like waiting for the votes
first
to
one?
Tally, the first one.
After a while, we couldn't watch the sets anymore because we were like, because I'm like moving around and like then I grunting. And, like,
yeah. Right.
How much time's left?
And yeah. I'm pacing. I'm like,
yeah. Yeah. No, I don't blame you not being able to watch that Batman set.
Come on. You did beat Ruru the week before.
Right, well, we showed up to play that week.
Oh, good.
So you're waiting for the votes to be tallied, and what is that like? What were you feeling? What was going through your head? Did you think maybe you were going to win, or were you nervous? What was going on?
Nervous, but I thought we were going to win.
I thought we were going to win.
I just walked off and like that was the best show of our lives, and they must have. I mean, and then we watched your show, and like, well, they didn't do the best show of their lives, so maybe we have a chance.
Well, I didn't think it was going to be as... I thought it was going to be much closer.
Uh-huh.
Like, no one knows who we are.
Yeah. Right. I said this before in the show, the best show wins in cage match. It doesn't matter who the teachers are, who's known, doesn't matter who's on a run or who's not on a run in general. I mean, I guess in a one-vote cage match, which you guys had, then who knows
what
it is. But, like, generally, all those factors that everybody tries to ascribe a win to adds up to 10 votes at most. Mm-hmm. I stand by that.
Yeah, I did not always believe that, but since we have been talking about it, you've convinced me.
Yeah.
That's,
I've seen lots of cage matches where one team had everything. Stacked the house, known people, this side of the other, going second. Somebody really, you know, some super charismatic person that the crowd loves. But if the show doesn't come together, you're going to lose.
Yeah.
Well, and for us, like, we didn't bring that many people to our first cage match. Yeah. And, like... I think we were just so excited to play in front of that many people. Because that doesn't happen often for us. Like,
it's or anybody. It's hard to find a long-form audience that's that psyched up, packed house. Herald Knight cage match, ASCAT. Like, these shows have, like, audiences that are ready to see improv. Mm-hmm. It's hard to find, for sure.
Yeah, and it's magical.
It is.
It is, like, really magical to be like, wow, all these people are here for improv. And it's an energy that feels alive. And
Yeah. It's super fun.
So it's announced that you won. So what happens after that? Like, what did you?
Going to McManus.
Yeah.
Get drunk. Yeah.
The homeless man is there waiting for
you. Move it, man.
So as a new group, relatively new, like you said, have you found that? Getting to do a show every week for 8 weeks, I guess it was, has made you better, faster.
Yeah, because I listen more now.
I think that's true. I think that's absolutely true. I think we also had a lot of shows during those.
We did, because people saw us and would ask us to do their shows, too. So we've been performing a lot.
Okay, so that Cage Match success led other people to say, oh, hey, will you come do our show?
Uh-huh. And even before Cage Match, we were still performing between 2 to 4 times a week since March 31st.
Wow.
Yeah, we've been performing at least anywhere from 2 to 5 times a week for the last, I guess, 4.5 months.
Yeah, which is another reason why we're good together, because when we came together, we're all like, we want to do shows. Because we've all been a part of groups that have been like lackadaisical and like, well, we'll book something here and there. But we're like, no, we want to perform a lot. So each of us are like getting our contacts and booking shows on our own.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
It's great when there's one person in the group who is willing to do that, but when everybody in the group is so excited that they're willing to do that kind of important footwork.
Because,
that's how you get better, and you need somebody who is, like, able to book shows, and you need everybody to be on board, you know, because if one or two people are like, I don't know, maybe I could do that date, I'll check, then it's like, it falls apart, you know.
Right?
Yeah. That's helpful. That's really helpful.
Well, you have a job at the front desk.
Oh, yeah, Nicole works in the training center on Sundays, and what other, is that your only shift?
Fridays
and Sundays at the training center at the desk. You can say hi to Nicole Byer, be nice to her, or we will kick your ass.
Yeah.
And I see you. I teach on Sundays, so I see you every day.
Yeah, and I do too, and I'm always getting myself locked out of the damn office, so it's always very helpful with that.
But that's, so you're the closest to an actual employed person in this. You're the closest to respectability.
Yeah, you have to go weekly.
Yeah, the rest of the time we're just dancing in the woods.
With a homeless man.
Yeah.
I just want to circle back on something that you had mentioned about how your form came together. Is that you were saying that Ashley Ward, your coach, pointed out that you do that organic stuff so well. Why don't you do it in your show? So then how does that translate in practices? Like, what kind of stuff did she work on with you to get you to be able to do that stuff in a performance setting?
Or just what are your practices like?
If
it's not like that.
We'll just simplify my question.
We start like an hour late.
Okay. We all start an hour late.
Don't do that.
That is not true. Okay, maybe 15.
Well, okay, fine.
Nicole's drunk.
Well, for the past few weeks, we've just been running our stuff. Just running deconstructions. We'll just do 2, and then we'll be tired, and then we'll leave. And like, okay, see you Thursday.
Let me get improv nerdy again on one thing. So I feel like deconstruction. What we're saying is you do an opening scene, and from that you're going to draw a lot of ideas that will inform the rest of the show. So the opening scene is like your opening.
Yes.
And I'm specifying that because I think because of this podcast, I'm going to email people now. So the deconstruction in Chicago, and some places here in New York, is a more strict form where it's like a source scene, and then you do like 2 ideas from it, then you return to the source scene, and then 2, and I might be getting that wrong, but it's like a really structured, form, I think.
Yeah, 2 thematic, you do opening scene,
so
2
we're not,
thematic
this is a looser,
scenes,
this
opening.
Is just kind of like the opening scene is the opening,
much,
right?
Much looser, because we were interested in the form, and Nicole did a ton of research and came to rehearsal, freaked out, she was like, guys, this sounds really hard.
Let's do it!
And then Ashley was like, calm down, breathe. What happens if we just, you know, do it more loosely, so, you know, it's not quite a montage, but you're definitely pulling from the themes and the ideas in that first scene to do the rest of your show. And that's kind of what it evolved into, is instead of like, okay, the third scene has to be this after the source scene, we decided that, no, we're going to really like focus and hone in on good, solid ideas, and I think adding the organic element helped to force that naturally and to not be able to think.
Yeah. Yeah, I love our organic transitions because it helps me remember things more. Because we start moving, and you even said this during a show, or just the movement, like, this feels like this thing that we did in the beginning. And it just, like, I don't know, sometimes we'll call things back and I don't even remember how we got there, but I'm just like, well, I remember this pattern.
That kind of physical, if you're doing a lot of physical work, like your muscle memory remembers the scenes before you're like, the front of your brain does.
Yeah,
for sure.
We'll just start moving and then I'll be like, ah, it reminds me of that time I was hitting you.
Yeah,
right.
Back to hitting.
Yeah. So when you say, I mean, you say organics, it's mostly like sound and movement, right? It's like repeating a phrase and kind of, is that, well, is that not true?
Missions.
We're trying to.
Yeah, we started with sound and movement. Then we did a workshop with Shannon O'Neill and she
Oh, right.
And
of course, because of Fwand, who had done transitions between all their scenes in their Herald, a lot of sound and movement, but a lot of other stuff, she mm-hmm. would be like, mm-hmm. she mm-hmm. would definitely yeah. be someone who would have a whole bunch of stuff to suggest.
And she worked with us, and I think it definitely helped to inform it, so we not just do sound and movement, but especially, I think it was the show before Rogue Elephant?
It was the Zamboni show that we had a lot of weird transitions.
Yeah, we got away from, like, that show in particular, we got away from our sound and movement edits to do a bigger variety of organic edits.
Yeah, we had, like, a lot of presentational transitions and, like, just cutting and then, like, mini scenes that weren't even things, and then we, like, go into an actual scene. I don't know. I think we just do whatever we want. I don't know if there's, like, a real structure.
Well, the only reason I get specific there, and I love the shows, I have no, it's not like I meant as a criticism, but when people say, do whatever you want for transition, each team tends to do one or two things, which is fine. But I'm just always curious what those one or two things happen to be, and sometimes breaking out of those one or two things takes, like, a conscious effort. Like, all right, we always tend to do this, so at least for tonight we're going to try to do this other thing instead and see how it goes.
Yeah, and that's what we fell into, and Shannon was trying to get us out of sound and movement, and it hurt. It hurt my head. I was like, I don't understand. She's like, do anything. I was like, anything? Really?
Yeah.
And I had just taken Shannon's organic class, and I was like, guys, no, calm down.
Like, no, I don't get it.
Like, no, stop freaking me out here.
Yeah.
And it just happened naturally on stage. Mm-hmm. And then they were like, oh, okay, now I get it. I can do anything.
Yeah.
That's what she meant.
Yeah, and then we found it during a school night performance where we're like, we found a
The witch scene.
Yep, which was so
What was
fun.
That scene? What, yeah, what was that?
Where instead of doing, you know, a sound and movement, I just went downstage and started pulling things from the air and kind of cooking and listing, and then
started transitioning to, like, cooking and listing things.
Like you're putting things into it.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then, but it was more like a kitchen than like a
cauldron or whatever.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And
then we became witches.
And we're just like just witches that were roommates, like in an apartment.
Yeah.
Can I ask you about a particular show that I didn't see, but Eric Tenoy was describing to me, and so I'm probably remembering his description wrong, but it was something. So I just don't want this to be on Eric when I mangle the description of the show.
Right.
It was something like Nicole, I think you were a 40s.
Zamboni.
So can we talk about that? I wasn't there. I want to hear about it. What were you doing? Like, you were some 40s.
Oh, okay. Well, it started with the transition was...
It was from the asthmatic kid, and I started the transition, and I was like...
Wait, whoa, you're already... Who's the asthmatic kid?
I was the asthmatic kid who got asthma every time something sexual happened. Which Sashir named, and I was like, great.
And I heightened.
Yes, you had no bra on.
The mom came in, and she's like, oh, I'm just going to pick up this laundry, and then she's going...
So then I started the transition, I was like, don't you hate it when you're a little boy and nothing goes your way?
And then Keisha did something similar to that. And I couldn't think of, like, another don't you hate it when. So I was like, don't you hate it when you talk like a little boy from the 1940s.
And it was, like, the ultimate yes and. We all just turned.
And they were like, we're going to do that scene. And Nicole just did it up. She's like, I'm doing this character. She's like, I'm a little boy from the 1940s. You think I'm weird. And I'm the straight man like I usually am. And then Keisha, and then it turned out our high school just had different era kids. And Keisha was a 1950s bully. And then we came back to it, and then I finally caught up.
Wait. You assigned a decade to the bully?
Yes.
Like you were like a rebel without a cause bully?
Yeah, I had a leather jacket.
Did you have a switch coat?
Yeah, like, and I was brushing my hair.
But you were actually 1950s. I was not 1940 whatsoever. I'm suspenders.
You were improv 40s. Right. The improv shorthand for 40s. Yeah. Not like historically accurate 40s. Yeah.
And then we went to the last scene, we went back to it, and I was 1940s, but then Nicole was like, nope, I'm in the 70s now. And Keisha was in the power 80s.
It sounds so great. Wow. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. 70s reference, Shaft.
Yeah, and my best. Women's lib shoulder pads.
Spin the cane, guys. I'm the 1940s.
That sounds so cool. My dream show would be someone to say a decade, and I just get to list things. I'm really interested in improv.
Well, you sort of did that dream show, right?
Oh, I did do that. That's right. Kevin let me do
that.
Yeah,
in a Heinz Brothers, in a Brothers Heinz
in the
cage
in
match.
The Brothers Heinz doppelganger cage match tourney match. We'll just have a decade off.
Might win. I don't know. We don't. I like that we don't do a lot of referential stuff. We play. I think our strong points are relationships and emotion
and character
and characters mm-hmm. and character development, because we like take you through the journey as opposed to like here's a splash of something and we're gonna move on and never see it
like,
again.
If you guys start making references, I'd just be like, what?
Well, I love Nicole because she'll just get this look of where are we?
And then spell it out.
And that's when I'm like, okay, I'm gonna be really clear.
That was
with
our
where
show you said something and I went. So then you like repeated, and I was like, "Oh, I know where we are." I think I literally said that.
It was the Mother Nature and God show, the show where we took down Bad Men. And it's okay, don't cry.
Every night I cry.
He's being a good sport about it, but it does bother him.
No, okay, it's just a stupid improv.
Yeah, right.
But Nicole, I saw in her eyes that she had no idea what I was referencing in the transition. I was like, yes, Mother Nature. And she's like,
oh! Classic Masculinity show was after, because I started a transition and I didn't name anything at the top. And then I was like, I'm going to spell it all out because I can see in their face and they have no idea what I'm talking about. Because
I thought we were in a summer camp until you're like, jail, clang, clang, clang.
I didn't say where we were. And that was my fault because the suggestion was entrapment. And then like somehow I was like, I want to be in a jail. And I was telling them to be quiet because I was like, people are trying to sleep. Prisoners are trying to sleep. This is a jail cell. Clack, 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 clack. So I started like banging against the bars, and I'm like, I'm a guard. Goodbye.
That was me playing the dick.
Yeah, and then I got to be the man jail. Cool jail.
Yeah. We have a lot of dick work too.
Yeah.
In our shows. Dick on dick work.
I've gotten away from it. I keep it.
Yeah.
Well, I got to come out of Sashir's vagina.
Yeah, as a demon. That was, what?
That was I saw that show. That was the Rogue show.
The Sandino show.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, I'm getting it mixed up. There was demons in the walls. There was demons in people.
Yeah. That was fun.
Anytime I get to come out of anything or hump something, I'm
happy. I was just waiting to climb that wall.
It's a classic improv move.
Yep.
The hump joy of emerging from various orifices of other people.
Uh-huh. Or humping pillars.
You did that, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That pillar has been humped by some of the nerdiest people in New York City.
I have nerd juice on me.
And I climbed that wall.
Yeah.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, when I was a demon, because they named it. They're like, something about exorcism. And I was like, I'm going to be a demon that climbs a wall. And so I just...
That's right. But you know, Sandino also did that in their show.
I know, but that's they had, after us. Yeah.
They didn't know that. They hadn't watched the show.
I didn't see the show, but I heard about that. And that was one of the
Sandino was warming up, so they didn't see the show. Well, and then they had something where Guglia climbs the wall to be a demon. And the audience didn't really react because the audience was like, oh, you're copying Doppelganger.
Yeah.
But they weren't copying.
And Brandon came up to me afterwards. He's like, can you tell my friends that I didn't copy you? Because I didn't see it. And I was like, I had to like tweet it. I was like, Brandon Guglia did not copy me.
Oh, really?
And he did it on the record.
Yeah.
There's been a few instances of that where that happens. The cage match audience just assumes that both groups watch each other's shows, which frequently is not true.
I've seen a lot of shows like that where there something's in the air and that
morphic resonance.
Yeah,
you'll see that a lot on Harold Night too, where it's like
just three or four of the Harolds will have like some reference to something.
Yeah, they'll take place
not
in
even
a zoo
not a reference, but something like
they'll have some weird kind of that the group before them had this happen too. Yeah. It's I feel like it's something magical to the improv stage.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I could talk more about improv nerds. Well, let's talk about what it's like to be three black women at the UCB theater. Or if you don't, or let me put it this way: part of the fun of having Doppelganger be so great is to walk through the back of the UCB theater, which I don't know. The perception of it, at least, is mostly like a white dude thing, or improv in general.
That is
Chicago.
A very strong perception.
Yeah, and it's at least somewhat true. I feel like it's less true than it used to be. But.
Our most can I tell you? I just read our. I read our Yelp comments weekly, and our most recent Yelp comment is somebody like, oh, there's not a lot of diversity at this theater. It's all white guys.
Well,
so.
One reason that stands out to me is like if you go to other comedy clubs in New York, this is New York City. Yeah. Like the city is not like that. And if you go to stand-up shows, if you go to plays, certainly, you know, it reflects the population of New York more. But here at the UCB and most improv, I don't know what it is. It's just like white dudes in khaki pants. That's what, you know.
I have my theories on it, but like that's also because I'm the diversity coordinator and I have to think about this stuff.
Yeah, right.
I don't know.
Well, let me ask you this. Is it a bummer to even discuss? Talk about this sort of thing?
I don't think it's a bummer. No. I think, like, I still stand by, like, one of my favorite comments is still, like, some guy, the first time we walked in, like, out for cage match, they're like, three black chicks? This is going to be terrible.
Was he just like a, was he a cartoon? Or what? Like was he like Uncle Scrooge?
Yeah, just an extra from Footloose just lifted and
Mr. Potter from the It's a Wonderful Life.
I'll see your impresso in jail.
And then he said after he saw us, he's like, I had nothing but respect for you guys because you were so funny. And then he tried to hit on me and I was like,
too late.
Nope.
Yeah.
Wrong order.
Yeah.
Charm me and then abuse me. That's the proper order to be with a comedian. I don't know. Like, I assume it's nothing you think about when you're performing, but like it makes Doppelganger. In addition, I mean, the primary thing is Doppelganger does great shows, but it also is fun when the Doppelganger as a team is a good story. It's encouraging. It makes when I see Doppelganger on stage, I'm like, oh, maybe we're not a bunch of assholes. Maybe right. Like my community that I'm invested in and I love so much is not a bunch of dicks.
Well, it's the perception is, as you said, the perception is this is a white college dude art form.
Yeah.
But the fact that you three ladies are so great and so hilarious and have kicked ass for the past 2 months is, you know,
sort of
evidence
affirmation
against
that we're not.
Yeah.
It may be more of a socioeconomic thing than a race thing, because like you just said, like white college. I went to a predominantly white college, and I'm used to this kind of stuff. Like, I'm used to the environment, and then I'm used to improv. I've seen it before. I know what it is. But if I like just lived in New York City and then came to this theater and like didn't know what improv was and didn't know, like couldn't connect with the people on stage, then I wouldn't come because it can be alienating, especially when everyone has the same references.
Yeah,
and we're talking about
Star Trek.
Wars. Yeah,
that's the first thing I heard when I saw your name.
Yeah, and like I get some of this stuff because I like grew up with this stuff too, but not every minority is gonna get it because it's not you can't draw from the same experiences.
And I think that is like. For me, what hits it on the head is, like, we all have a similar background, I feel like, and sometimes overly referential humor is alienating because, you know...
That's not race-based. Everyone hates me. My team's when I didn't mean in general. I meant, like, that aspect.
Right, right.
But I think what... Like, just in our response, what people seem to love about what we do is the fact we do focus more on relationship and character than necessarily premise or reference. And not that we don't like those things, but, like, for us, I think what is more palpable, someone walking off the street, everybody can relate to character, everybody can relate to relationship.
Well, we could talk about, I think that's just where your scenes start. Like, you can, an improv scene can start with, like a monologue and a premise, it can start with a pattern game and a premise, or it can start with a physical gesture, which is expanded into a world, and then you get into your scene, or it can start with the character. You just talk, I mean, to me, the second half of any improv scene, you can't tell where it came from.
Yeah.
But it's just where, I mean, and you don't have to agree with me, this is school guy talking.
Right.
So it's just like where the group prefers to begin.
Well,
because other groups are the opposite. They'd rather start with like a monologue and start with an idea and go from there.
Well,
and then they're great. Like, it, you know,
well,
whatever suits you.
Yeah, and it's not that we're against any of that. It's just that we've noticed, like, especially having some of my friends, like, of color who haven't seen a ton of improv shows, that's the thing that they didn't necessarily seeing some of the other groups we've performed against and not slamming against them.
Right.
But they're the ones who never saw improv shows but then really enjoyed some of the things we brought to the table. So
well, I definitely agree that an accessible beginning yes. is like the hardest thing to do in an improv show because yes. it's such a weird form and it's an audience that's not used to it. So if you can have any way in at the top of your scene or show for people to just be like, what is happening? Mm-hmm. I think that's why mono scenes are so popular.
Yes.
Because there's no opening and they look like a play.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we know what a play is. Uh-huh. People walk in, they walk out, they talk. I can follow. Right. There's no weird sweep edits. There's no weird. Yeah.
But and it's about the commitment to the characters, like any good improv is.
Yeah.
It's about the commitment to the characters and what you're playing and acting the shit out of it. And so if you can do that, it becomes an accessible thing.
Yeah,
yeah, and I think that is an accessible form, but yeah. you were going to say something.
Oh, yeah, I've had friends come from out of town who like haven't seen improv and don't know what we do, and we do weird stuff together, yeah. like with, yeah. our like weird sound and movement stuff and like and then going in and out of scenes, but like totally followed the whole show and was like, yeah, yeah I loved it. I mean, I don't know what you did. Don't know what that thing's called, but like, I like it. It was funny, and I understand it.
Mm-hmm. I think it helps that we're cute.
It certainly doesn't hurt.
How much would you plan your outfits, Nicole? I noticed in the Rogue show, you had really cool glasses, and am I remembering the right show? I think for the Rogue show, you had like
a flower
and a big flower, and yeah. So is that like something you just kind of throw on right before you walk over to the theater, or is it like
I think and I take things off and I put them on.
Yeah.
Yes, because I want to look good. Maybe someone will see me and be like, I want to take her home.
But you do have to like map it up because you want to be able to get physical.
But you want to look cute.
But you want to look cute, and you don't want to like be too revealing or like have anything too tight because you don't want people to focus on that instead of what we're saying. Mm-hmm. So
I go through this every. Week.
Yeah.
I'm glad that somebody is finally verbalized because this is a struggle.
John's a clothes horse.
And I'm so afraid of revealing things and of having people look at me as an object.
Fashion is so much of a way that you express yourself that it's hard for you to not focus on that, John.
So
I think one of the reasons Bad Men Lost the Doppelganger was that the Joker suit you had, the big purple
had on and took off a Green Lantern suit and I wish that I hadn't.
Well, woulda, coulda, shoulda.
So where did you, I think we skipped over this, but this is a good place to ask about it. Where did the three of you, how did you get into this? How did you find
improv,
the UCB theater?
Individually.
Improv and the theater, yeah.
I went to acting school.
This is Nicole.
Me. I went to the American Musical and Dramatic Academy. SCAMDA is what we call it. But I graduated, and then I spent 2 years, and I was like, I'm going to take an improv class. And then I never signed up for it because I got scared. And then I ran out of money, so then I got married. Oh, I probably shouldn't put that out there. Whatever.
She's not married anymore.
I'm not married
She's
anymore.
Not married.
Okay.
So I got married for money, and then I took the money and set up for improv classes.
What?
The best stories come when I'm not expecting.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I was supposed to pay my bills, but then I was like, I want to take improv, so I did. I signed up for it, then I took another class, and another one, and I didn't pay any of my bills.
Wow.
But how did you know about UCB?
Oh, I was researching improv schools, and I found UCB in the Pit. I didn't know about the Magnet, and I applied to be an intern at the Pit, and they gave it to me, but then they took it away because they gave out too many, so shame on that Pit. So I came to UCB.
Okay. Hmm. And then I don't remember when I remember some class. I remember you first, Doug Moe's class. I don't remember when I first heard about you, Nicole, but I heard about you being very funny at some point. Were you in the diversity program ever? Did you ever get any classes from that?
Yes, I did.
That's maybe was it one of those meetings or something?
Continue.
Okay. And then how about you two?
I have a slightly different story from the two of them. Well, I did go to acting
school.
What do you mean
Keisha,
slightly different? Yeah. You didn't get married for money. And
that part's
well,
very
okay.
different.
That part is very different. I admit. I graduated from the Actors Studio at New School for Drama. That doesn't exist anymore. I saw Ben Romica's thesis, and I think it's hilarious that now I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember you. From back when we were in acting school and like all cryy. And that's what we did in acting school.
Yeah.
We cried for like 6 months. And once I graduated, I did a bunch of short form improv in college and then remembered like my love for comedy. So I was like, oh, I'll take a class at UCB. This must have been like 2005, 2006. And I started taking class. I had Doug Moe and Joe Winger and Shannon O'Neill and Ari Vodakis for my level one, but I had a terrible time because I felt so alienated, so I dropped out for 2 years.
Okay.
Like, I got up to level three, quit, felt like, never felt like I quite fit, and stopped taking classes for 2 years, and then I guess it was about a year and a half ago, I was like, no, I'm going to come back, because that 2 years, I kept doing improv, just not here.
Right.
And that's when I was like, no, I'm going to start from the beginning again and, like, really just focus on getting through the program. And, like, instead of just bitching about how I'm tired of all these white male students who don't get me, I decided that I wanted to be a part of, like, the change to, like, make it a super inclusive community because I love the teaching here and I love the philosophy here. And, you know, instead of waiting for people to accept me, I just wanted to help this community grow into a community that accepts everybody.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of my roundabout story of, like, I started and then stopped. So, like, there's people I see on stage now who were in my 101, 201, and 301 years ago.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Who are performers now.
I met you in your second come around then.
Yeah, you met me part second. Two.
Yeah.
Keisha part two.
Keisha part two.
I think that's a great philosophy to have. You know, I think that's a great thing to think of, like, rather than just abandon it and be like, screw it, this isn't, you know, these people don't like me, to have that attitude of like, well, I'm going to be a part of the change. I'm going to be a part of the thing that helps the theater become more diverse is such a great way of looking at things.
Yeah, I really do believe in the work that goes on here. Like, not, like, that sounds so, it feels so exaggerated
over-dramatic or something.
Yeah.
But everybody.
Well, that's probably
that.
From acting school.
Where's my tissue? But I think I love the philosophy and the approach to improv here because I think it's a very smart way to do improv. But, you know, there's certain things that, you know, I think this community can grow so much bigger and take it out that I want to be a part of. And that's, like, that's why I'm excited to be here, and I, like, love being involved in the theater. Just, like, even beyond playing on stage, I just like being in this community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We like it, too.
Yeah.
And Sashir's story. Improv's always kind of been around my life. I'm from Indianapolis, Indiana, and I played volleyball in middle school. And our coach at the end of the season would just take us to comedy sports at, like, just to celebrate. And comedy sports was like a competitive short form. And that was the first time I saw it on stage. I was like, what is this thing? I like it. And so I would make my parents take me to comedy sports shows all the time. And I, like, watched every episode of the Drew Carey version of Whose Line Is It Anyway? Yeah. But I never saw myself doing it. And then there was a comedy sports team at my high school, and I did it for a week. Because it interfered with my show choir career. So far.
Show choir. Oh, man.
The best.
Yeah.
One of the strangest institutions.
Yeah.
And I'm in the long form improv world.
Yeah.
It was my life at the time. I was like, I don't have time for this new improv thing. I've been doing show choir for 3 years.
Did you ever go to any Disney Magic Music Days competitions or anything like that?
No, we didn't.
Okay.
But we won, like, nationals in our area in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
No big deal. Then I moved to New York. And then I went to college at University of Virginia. And I didn't know that I would be involved with acting, but I started doing musicals because people on my hall started doing them. And it was fun, and somebody in the group and the play director, he was in the one improv group that they had there and asked me to audition, and I didn't that year because I was like, I don't think I'm good right for that, and I did it the next year and I didn't even get called back, and I was like, fuck that, I'm gonna start my own group. So I started my own group like a year later. And it's, like, still blossoming, and they're doing really well. Named them Moose Boosh, and I like them a lot. And then I came to New York last January, and I knew I was going to act, but I didn't know how improv was going to play a part in my life. I didn't think I would. I, like, avoided it for a couple months, and then I saw Ask Cat on New Year's Eve, and I was like, I love this. I want to be here. And also UCB Tour Co came to University of Virginia my last year, and it was Lennon Parham, Shannon O'Neill, Neil Casey, Bobby Moynihan, Eli Newell. I think that was it. And we had like a question and answer session afterwards. And someone asked a question like, how do you get started in comedy or something like that? How do you get serious about it? And Bobby said, well, you have to move to New York, go to UCB, and work really, really hard. And I'm like, okay, I'll put that in my mental Rolodex. and once I spent most of my money on UCB shows when I first got here. And I didn't sign up for a class. I just kept seeing a lot of shows. And then I was like, all right, I'll finally sign up for a class. And Sylvia Zulz is amazing.
Yes, we love her.
We love her. And she's the one who told me about the diversity program. Because she's the realest teacher I've had so far. She, someone had a question about women in comedy, or like, why do women get shit on?
She's a what teacher you had so far?
Real.
Okay.
She's a real lady.
We have
time
for her.
Yeah,
I should have mentioned her too. I love you, Sylvia.
But she, we had someone had a question about like, why do women get shit on in scenes, or like something about women in comedy. And so we actually took time out of class to talk about it, just like have an open discussion about it. And then she said, well, UCB's trying to be more diverse. They're starting a diversity program. I don't know that much about it. And so I talked to her after class, and I was like, what is this thing? How can I get involved? And she gave me Caitlin Steitzer's email, and I contacted her. For like a lot, and Caitlin's like, we're not even ready to start this. And I was like, no, but I can help. Really, I want to be involved. and then Sylvia recommended me for the scholarship, and I was like in the first round of people who got the scholarship.
Right, I remember that
last year.
We had an interview. Of the half circle. Yeah, we didn't know what we were doing.
We do now.
Yeah.
It's much better. and that kept me here, I guess, because I was like, free class is awesome, so I'll just keep taking classes.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just like, I guess I never looked at any other theaters because I knew, because Bobby said, go to UCB. And I was like, okay, yes. And then like the next month he was on SNL. I was like, definitely. If that's where you have to go to be on SNL, I will be there.
Sylvia went to University of Virginia.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of UVA. But didn't Winston Knoll go to UVA?
Abra Tayback, Jocelyn Guest.
Right. Oh, wow.
David Martin back from Police Chief Rumble.
Yeah.
And Next of Our Lives.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a bunch of people.
Huh. Well, cool.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that's the point of the diversity program was to change the demographics of what's on stage by keeping more people in the classes so they were in the community. So, it's a testament to the program that good people are sticking around.
It's definitely working, I think. I think we're starting to see just more diversity on the stage, more consistent diversity in the classes, and also more... you know, funny people who are diverse finding their way to the stage in one way or another.
I was going to say part of it, too, is I think it's evolved past the scholarship program, too.
Yeah, like, you're right, mm-hmm. Of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like a networking.
More brown people in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the goal, more brown people in the audience.
and like, gay people. And,
Definitely.
Disabled and...
People on stage is what changes it. You come to a show, you're not sure about it. It's either a good show or it's not. But if you connect with people on the stage, then you get emotionally invested in the community.
Well, it makes me think, okay, I'm going to get my nerdy for a second. It's like mirror neurons. Like
Now I'm on board.
But like part of how we learn, like they still are trying to figure it out like in neuroscience, but like part of how we learn is by watching others, that the same brain functions happen when we watch another person do it, that it's easier for us to relate to someone who looks like us. That's
right.
Just the truth. Like,
right.
I'm going to relate more to a woman than a man, just biochemically, because that's how I am in this society.
Right.
And that when you see someone who looks like you on stage, you think it's possible. I think that, you know, like, I think there's a biological reason, and then it definitely evolves your psychology in that. And so I think what's so important about seeing the diversity is you're literally telling audience members and people who come to see it that anybody can really be on this stage.
Yeah.
And when you see yourself there, you think, well, maybe I can take a class.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Right. It's to, for me, it's to help people get over the thing you experienced your first time around, Keisha, which is just like anybody who goes to your classes here, you feel left out, you feel a little bit alone, everybody.
Yeah.
So you just something just to get over that little hump, and then if you still like it and you're still into it, then it's done its job.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it might doesn't mean it's right for everybody still. No. That's okay.
Also, like, we talked about this in my interview last year for the diversity scholarship about wanting to open the door to discussing race.
Yes. Oh, that's true. Like, anytime race enters into an improv scene, it's dangerous territory. It's difficult for people to talk. I mean, in any conversation.
Yeah.
Difficult for the people to talk about without emotions. You know, people getting emotional without people getting really opinionated, making assumptions. The language in talking about race is weird. Like, some of it sounds too clinical and cold, and some of it sounds too mean and familiar. Yeah. It's really hard. And when you're making stuff up on stage and trying to be funny, and maybe you're not that good at it. I mean, class shows, I've seen some disastrous scenes. Well, but by nice people.
Yeah.
Where race comes in, and all of a sudden it's just like, why was it a Ku Klux Klan meeting about this?
Or yeah.
Why, you know, that was just you were just being racist. That's not funny.
Yeah. Yeah. People's mental shorthand.
But it's hard. I don't mean to put them down. It's difficult.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think part of it is if it's only one type of person in the classroom, that's where we like learn how to talk about things on stage. Like when you do improv, you spend a while, you learn how to do a relationship scene in an you do enough breakup scenes in improv that you learn how to do them. You do enough like proposal scenes, surgery scenes. It sounds like stupid, but you do like a million of them.
Yeah.
And now you kind of know the shorthand. So now we need to get to the point where it's just like characters can mention that someone's black or Latino or whatever, and it doesn't dominate the conversation any more than it should.
It doesn't become the game.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's just not that you mentioned it isn't the thing.
And because it's like, yes, people can happen to be diverse in a complex world where there's game, but like that interesting thing of like an authentic, specific human being doesn't make it a game. Like, I was in.
But even better, sometimes it does. Like, there is comedy, a lot of comedy involved in people's perceptions of race. And it's like, I mean, in that interview, Sashir, we talked about stand up versus improv, because stand ups get up there.
Yeah.
The first thing they do is talk about themselves. Look at me. I'm a big fat Latino guy from, you know, whatever, Queens, and he talks about it and he's funny or he's not.
Right.
It's out there.
That's your stand up.
That's my stand up. That's a real meta thing.
Right.
I go deep into that character. It takes me like an hour and a half to prepare.
Sure. And to apply the makeup.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, God. And the bat suit. It's crazy.
It takes a long time. Weirdly, it's very meditative to go through that process. But it's in the conversation. They have smarter conversations. Even shitty stand-ups do.
Yeah.
And the good ones, it's great. And I was like, I wish our theater could do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think people tend not to play like the truth of the character when someone's named black. They're like, automatically they're like, oh, yo, son.
Yeah. Like stereotypes.
Well, it's the same thing if you tell a man to be a woman. They sometimes are not a real woman. Yeah, they're just like improv
a
woman.
I mean, I guess maybe my men are a little broad.
Yeah, women doing men can be the same way.
Sure.
Yeah. Every time you, let's not even get into it. But like, it's difficult to do improv. We are doing caricatures to some degree and shorthand and icons.
Mm-hmm.
So you forgive some broadness for sure. But yeah, you bring race or sexism into it, and it's just, you're on the razor's edge.
Yeah. Or sexual orientation, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of scenes are like, the joke is, I'm gay.
Isn't that hilarious?
Two guys.
Look at the way I'm reacting to this because I'm gay.
Yeah.
You know?
Andy Secunda on my improv team some time ago talks about how that making fun of somebody for being gay is the like blackface, or this was like in the early 2000s when he was talking about it. Like, it was just accepted as silly to be like a big Queenie character. But like that, and there is something kind of silly and fun about it that like registers. But like, you're gonna look back at that, he'd say, and you're gonna be embarrassed that you ever did that scene. Like, it is like similar to how blackface is once an accepted, oh, we're just having fun. Like, don't even think about what this means.
Yeah.
We're just being silly and loud and singing, and it's all a good time. Well, it's like, well, it's fucked up.
I think so much of it is like, are you playing it from a character point of view? Are you attempting it from a character point of view? Are you attempting it from a caricature? Because that's all you have.
Right, are you a real person or not?
Yeah.
And
it's like, so yeah, it's going to be broad even when we attempt character because it's in the moment, it's improv. But if you're just attempting a caricature, it's going to feel it. And it's something that...
Right.
Yeah. And there's something to, like, even just putting on any kind of affectation. Like, you think that if you're in a scene, you're a man, somebody labels you as a woman... You think, well, I can't just talk the way I talk, but like...
Yeah, you want to commit and show that you've made a change?
Yeah, but sometimes that change is like not the thing that you should
be.
But it's not the thing that... you change your affectation rather than changing the way that you perceive things or changing the way that you react to things. Like, you don't have to be like, oh, well, I'm a woman now. Yeah. It can just be in the way that you react to something. Yeah. And it's the same thing, like you were saying, like if somebody is labeled black or any other race, they'll immediately affect that, you know, some kind of what people think is a black accent rather than...
it's just
than,
a surface thing. It's, they don't go deep and, like, actually put a perspective on it. It's just like,
it would be like,
yo, yeah. That's my thing. And, like, it's just like putting on...
Didn't Sean Diston in the show last night, wasn't Sean Diston being a black character in Backdraft? Wasn't that part of the cage match last night?
I don't know.
Tesla was up last night. Great team. And he and John Timothy were guys who were obsessed with the movie Backdraft. They were constantly showing other characters in the show Backdraft.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever they would point off, the back line would do the voices of the movie. Not accurately. And at one point, Sean was like, there's the black guy in Backdraft. And like somebody in the back went like, yo, man, what's up? And he's like, see, you can tell he's black. He said, yo, what's up? Or something like that.
Yeah, that's what it
happy
was.
That he called that out.
Yeah.
It would be like, you know, you talked about how in your shows you focus a lot on character and relationships. It would be like if you came out and as three black women were like just did improv about how you're three black. Black women, you know, like that's not as interesting as.
And also,
like,
that's your deal.
What's that?
They'd be stealing your show.
Oh yeah, well, that's why I've been doing this one man improv show for a while, where I'm like, I'm three black women.
How long did it take you to get ready for that?
Oh, it's a lot.
Two of the people are complete prosthetics.
Yeah, I have to glue them on.
Yeah.
We had one funny show because we don't talk about race. That much, I don't think. Most of our characters don't have a race.
It's not a big.
But there was one show where we
are you talking about food?
Where the black actress one, where Keisha's first line was like, I'm not Angela Bassett. And then, but you kept like pushing it on her that she was. And then I was a waitress and I kept labeling her as different black actors. I'm like, Gabrielle Union, right? And then I come back, I'm like, oh my God, Alfred Woodward. And like, she's like, these people are like, not even, they don't even look alike either. Like, you know what people look alike? I don't look like these people. I was like, Rudy from the Huxtables grew up to be so smart.
and then I was thinking about the one where who were we? I just remember we were like crapping on one character. We were like, and we were like, he's like, you people.
Oh, yeah.
You called me up.
Yeah.
Because you said it. You were like, you people. And I was like, that's funny.
And you're like, yeah.
I didn't mean it anyway. I was like, you people. And then you were like,
yep.
You people. And then we were like, nope, not about race. We just hate you.
Yeah. I was like, and I didn't even say my race. I was like, why do you hate me? Because I'm a different race. And they're like, no, we just hate you.
We're not racist. We just dislike your content.
Yeah.
Character. And I liked our last show had a lot of lesbian scenes in it, but it wasn't about that.
Oh, yeah,
all of our lesbians had like, and then our one straight couple was an abusive couple. It's like a big old PSA for homosexuality.
Right. Yeah,
we're
that's
like,
right.
It's okay.
Well, you know, I mean, the reason I was, what was it, Nicole?
My favorite black scene we did was a ghetto childbirthing scene.
What's that?
I was giving birth. Keisha was my very hood rat husband.
But he was like more dirty than hood rat, because he kept trying to help me with the bird and like spit on his hand. And I was the doctor. I was like, no, get away. He's like, no, I've been in there before.
And I was yelling at you to not tell my husband / boyfriend because he didn't propose to me.
Yeah, don't tell my baby daddy, who may not be the baby daddy, what to do.
And then I was like, yeah, let me get in there.
Using all your actor studio training.
Right. Sorry,
really
yeah.
Spit on your hand and mime shoving it in
your
teeth.
Yeah, did you imagine like the experience of what it would have been like?
I did. I felt it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep, gross. I felt that.
Sure. You have to do any kind of physical warm-up, like any kind of etudes or anything like that before the...
I did, of course. I sat
course.
In a chair and relaxed.
Well, yeah. I mean, the main reason Doppelganger is great is the shows are great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the shows
are
really
good. Yeah, and the three of you are hilarious.
It's really fun to watch. There's one of your shows is like a clinic in how to agree with each other at the top of the scene and to trust that you'll figure it out. And I think the organic transitions force that because you can't do a lot of pre-planning when you're going to fall into it off of some sort of like either sound and movement or 40s kid presentational moment. And they're really fun. I really liked watching them, so I look forward to seeing you guys again.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, and thanks so much for coming in and doing this interview. It'll be up in like 2 months, probably.
It'll be sooner than that.
No, I think we have somebody editing these now, right?
Yeah, so, I stopped doing it.
So. Yeah, so these will be. The big problem was that the two of us were too lazy.
We were stubbornly
busy.
Right,
busy.
And then busy, of course.
Yes, yeah. Sure. And then Will said, "Why don't?" And I said to Will, "I'll do it." And then
a week later, I was like, "Let's get someone else."
Yeah. 2 weeks later, we were like, "Let's get someone else."
Anyway, but, thank you so much for
thank you. It was great.
Thank you.
And good luck in your future shows.
Is there any? So we have the SoGlow project on September 17th at midnight. Where else can people
see? That's Saturday at UCB.
Saturday here at UCB, September 17th.
Well, it must be 18th. Must be the 18th then.
Well, technically, right?
What?
No.
Oh.
No. It's Saturday the 18th.
No, Friday.
Oh, it's Saturday. That's right. Yep. Yeah, that's right. It's
Friday the 17th. Okay, Friday it was on Saturdays before. That's why I'm confused.
Yeah, Friday the 17th. Thank you. Friday.
Yeah.
So the SoGlow project is Friday the 17th at midnight, which is technically Saturday, which is what my brain did.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So where else can we see Doppelganger or each of you individually?
We have a website, doppelgangercomedy.com.
Oh, great.
You can have a whole listing of our shows, but we're like kind of sparse right now.
Gentrify Brooklyn. Oh, that's the 25th. That's
we have a lot.
We have a lot of random stuff.
Well, why don't you guys out there book Doppelganger then?
Yeah,
Doppelganger Comedy and doppelgangercomedy@gmail.com.
Right, and then facebook.com/doppelgangercomedy.
Great.
Yep.
That's a great thing to do, get a website.
Just type Nicole's Sashir and Keisha into the search bar. They'll come up.
Yeah.
All right, well, okay. Thanks very much, guys.
And yeah.
John, get us out of here.
Thank you, Will. check out willhines.net.
It is. It's a voiceover actor from Pittsburgh.
And we will see you next week. Bye.
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 Bye.